Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, Ben, the plush host with the plush most over here. Although, actually, I say that, I know people have been receiving their plush trophies in the mail.
They have been. Yeah, so if you are at home and you have received your plush Popcorn Culture One True Host Trophy, be sure to take a picture with it.
You got it.
Tag us is what I'm going for.
Tag us with it. Although, actually, also check the tag when you get the plush, because we got custom tags on it.
Yes.
And there's like, it's different from the one sitting here on set. Yours will have like an official little Popcorn Culture tag on the side. It's so cool.
It's really neat. I'm so happy with how they turned out. They're looking really good. And in other quick update news before we dive into today's episode, we are officially in Q4.
We are.
Which means we have our new merch offering available, which is going to be a vinyl record with an exclusive episode of Popcorn Culture, like pressed into it, you know?
Yeah.
Ethan explained to me, Ethan the editor, that I kept calling it a pressed vinyl record, and he's like redundant.
It's like
you don't need to tell people that it's pressed vinyl because all records are. And you know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they make like a mold and then they just like press straight down onto it.
Yes. Yeah. And I didn't know. And I know that like when I was researching like where to get it, it was like, hey, we do pressed vinyl records. And I was like, that's amazing.
See, the fact that the company specifies it makes you wonder if there are non-pressed vinyl records. Like scratched?
My original thought, and I don't know, and I'm sure someone's going to let me know, but my original thought was that the original record, the way that it worked was quite literally that the needle was actively scratching song into it as it played.
I could see something. Yeah. If it's not a pressing, then it needs to be like a sharp something, like carving it or something.
Right. But the original has to be made somehow. How is the original record made?
Because
what we're talking about is like the precursor to, you know, like CDs and such.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how vinyl records came to and are in existence.
It's amazing to me that at some point someone was like, do you think we can trap like noise in this side of this thing? You're not trapping the noise itself.
You're trapping the pattern. The vibrations.
That's unbelievable that someone even thought of that.
It is unbelievable that it works.
Yeah.
Like that sounds are so specifically the vibrations that they can be recorded in this way.
Are you familiar with the comedian Nate Bargatze?
I'm not especially well.
Okay.
I think you've seen him before.
We did. That was the last live ticketed event I went to
Okay.
before COVID. Okay. So, and he's had a couple of like specials on Netflix. Very funny guy. Would recommend seeing in person. But over on the talks, I keep getting a particular bit of his that's popping up. And it is, he's talking about how if he got sent into the past, he's not sure it would make any difference to the real world at all. Like there'd be no repercussions because he doesn't know like how to do anything.
Like
if he got sent to the past, he's not even sure he could prove it. They're like, well, in the future we'll have these little things we carry around in our pockets and you can like call other people and you can like talk to them from far away and they'd be like, oh, show us out. But I don't know how you know, like and there's like he says like, oh, they'd want me to prove it, like prove you're from the future, like who's the next president gonna be? And he's like, I don't know
can you give me a list of candidates? I might be able to tell you from that.
Yeah.
Oh man. So
it's, but like stuff like that is like, yeah, we live in the future. We have all this technology, but I sort of feel the same way. Like if I got sent to the past, you wouldn't even know. I couldn't make any difference.
Man, I was thinking about this exact same thing. It's almost like if you were to find even like the answer to the meaning of the universe, like if you figured it out, like if you thought long and hard enough about it and you were like, I've got it.
You think you can just think enough about it and figure it out?
The thing is, you'd never be able to convince somebody that you did.
Right.
Like, I think that that's the problem. It's like, you could come up with the answer. The answer could already be out there. In fact, it probably is already out there. And still, it's like, no, how do you ever convince somebody? Because everybody is going to be skeptical of it somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. The answer is probably just out there.
Right.
It's
right.
Just out there.
You know, because it's like any other phase that might come through. So it's almost like
yes.
when the dot-com bubble was happening, it's like the future is the internet. And I'm sure plenty of people were like, it's a phase. This is going to be gone. Things like this show up all the time. You think you know what you're talking about. Like, I've been around the block. I've seen it. And it's like, oh no, this was here to stay.
Yeah.
This was a thing that was going to...
It reminds me a lot of like health trends. Like Beth, my wife, follows all these different like nutrition and health bloggers, and I feel like it must be so confusing because each of them has like a different viewpoint about the best way to live a healthy life.
Oh, sure.
You know, and to their credit, maybe it really just depends on what your goals are. And Beth just has many interests, but it'll be like, you know, this person's like a really good like runner. So everything on there is like how to like eat healthy to be a better runner. But then there's other things that like you shouldn't even care about, like what you look like at all. It's just about feeling happy with yourself and stuff. It's like those. And it's like they probably both have good advice, but it's very different approaches and it's like conflicting information. And both of them are like, this is how to be healthy. And it's like it's very weird, like how, I don't know, like you would think something like what you should eat, like what is healthy, would be something we've pretty much figured out in 2021 as we're recording this, right? But like if you were to put down, like if someone were to ask me why like an organic carrot is better than the other carrots, non-organic carrots,
sure,
that just sounds like made up carrots. Anyway, these carrots are not organic. Like, what are they, mechanical?
Mechanical carrots.
Yeah.
They were 3D printed using orange filament.
The day we can genuinely 3D print actual carrots, that, which I feel like doesn't feel impossible to me.
I know, right?
That'd be amazing. But if someone asked me, like, I don't know, you know, like...
Like, you don't know the difference between organic and non-organic.
Like, I don't like know why like, one's so much... I think it has to do with, like, what kind of, you know, pesticides are or are not used on various crops while they're being grown and the type of soil they're, you know, stuff like that.
Yep. And then of course, even with that, I feel like there's probably some type of cynical argument where it's like, really, you think organic makes a difference? It's a label that companies buy. They buy the label organic,
right?
You know, it's like, they're not actually organic. They're not actually different. What they're doing, they bought the ability to say it, you know, and like,
right.
Cause there's a skeptic to everything.
There is. But then part of me is like, are you like if you're eating non-organic carrots, right? Are you, that still to me seems like it's way healthier than someone eating Cheez-Its, to choose another orange food. You know
nice,
what I mean?
Nice. Good other orange food.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could have gone citrus very easily, but you didn't.
Right.
You didn't.
No, I wanted a junk food.
Okay. I got you. Know? You.
It's like,
so you chose carrots.
Right. Cause like how, like it's the ability. It's like you could be eating non-organic carrots and have someone telling you that's not healthy. You know, it's like, I'm eating vegetables right now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah. This is like, I think about this. I've thought about this a lot because I feel like right now, any type of topic that there is, 50% of people are going to be on one side or the other of just about everything. And it kind of like, have you ever heard the phrase, like, there's more than one way to like skin a cat?
Yeah.
It's kind of a morbid phrase, honestly. Yeah. I don't really like to think about skinning cats whatsoever. Yeah. It's not tops on my list, if I'm being frankly with you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm not here to debate different types of ways to skin cats. Let's choose a different example.
Yeah.
But we are where we are, aren't we? And where that is largely divided on everything. But what I think is interesting about it is that when it comes down to it, it's like everybody thinks that their way is right and the other way is wrong. But it's like, really, if they were wrong, there wouldn't be 50% of people who think they're right and adamant that the other side is wrong. And it's like, can we just agree that there are two ways to do this?
There
are two ways to skin the cat. Why is this the example?
Yeah, why does it matter? The cat is skinned.
right, exactly. Yeah, it's like, and the thing is that because it's like 50-50 down the middle, and it's so hard to like trudge forward on anything because we're always like gridlocked on it, it's almost like, shouldn't the fact be that so many other people think, like, we're so determined to have like the majority agree on something?
Yeah.
That it's like, which is fine. I'm not like saying that the majority shouldn't be a way to make decisions or anything like that. But it's like, guys, there's a lot of people that think both of these two approaches, like, while different from one another, they both seem to have a lot of reasons why they think it's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
And
well, okay. So let me reverse it on you then.
Okay, reverse
is it possible
me.
That the things most people are like that? Is it possible that in fact, most people do agree on tons of things, and it is simply the things that where there are two really compelling viewpoints that obviously then you disagree. Like many people agree on lots of things, but you don't hear about those things because everyone's already in agreement with it.
True.
You know what I mean?
True. Yeah.
Like you can't hear about a disagreement if there isn't a disagreement.
That's a good
But you don't really hear just about like everyone agreed.
I know. But this is like, I feel like people like to be on teams, you know? And it's like, it's really funny because it's like you're deciding which team you're going to be on any given argument. And it's like, I've decided I'm on this team, you know? And it's like, I bleed these colors, you know? But then it's like, what if, this is why I always say alien invasion, only way to have world peace.
Only way.
Because you know who then everybody's on the same team? The world.
Against the invasion. All the humans can at least agree. Humans before aliens.
Right.
Exactly.
Probably.
Who's
probably?
You know what? Probably. You say that. You know there's going to be some that are like, guys, they are smarter than us and we should listen and we should let them take over. Okay? They just know better.
It seems extremely likely, actually, now that you put it like that. We would all at first be on the same team, and then eventually we would have divided feelings about the newcomers.
Sure.
Is I think probably how it would end up going.
That's probably, yeah.
But like,
would normalize. By the way, you should read Project Hail Mary if you haven't gotten there yet. You know, just throwing it back out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes me, I feel like I just got spoilers.
What?
Yeah.
No.
I feel like I had it figured out anyway, though. So
you,
that's okay.
I don't think you have it figured out.
No.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you're really going to like it.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's fair. Now we're just in brotherly ramblings.
Isn't that what this whole show is?
It is. But most of the time, everybody listening to the brotherly ramblings knows what's the what.
People know what's the what. We've talked about Project Hail Mary on the pop.
Okay.
And we've talked about alien invasions.
Listen, Jay.
And a lot about people disagreeing.
You know what? I think that 50% of people are going to agree with you that we have talked about this enough for context to be provided. And then the other 50%, my 50%, the right 50%, they're going to be like, no, we did not have enough context for that.
Well, I disagree with you, Ben. I don't think 50% of people disagree on everything.
That's pretty
good.
You
see what I did?
I see what you did. I see what you did.
You know what? You know what? It's so funny you bring up, like, oh yeah, 50% of people disagree on things, except we've been sitting here, and you say that 98 episodes into a 98 game winning streak on the True Host.
LeVon True Host.
It's not like a 50-50 split. It's not like at any moment one person could change it.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
That's a good point. Well, yeah. So I say 50% of people are divided on many things. I didn't necessarily say 50% of people were divided on popcorn culture.
Yeah.
where it's exactly like what you said, which is like when there's not actually a disagreement to be had.
Mm, yeah.
Then you just don't
everyone's
hear about
in, it. Everyone's in agreement about this.
There are no camps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Team Jazzy J, guys, on Patreon. Get your vinyl record. That's what I'm really trying to say.
That's what you're trying to say. Okay. So the question here, though, because this is something that I've thought about. So what does the word culture mean to you as it pertains to like society, groups, people, tribes?
Like
not bacteria is what I mean.
Not like bacteria culture.
Not bacteria.
Not like
culture.
Yogurt.
This is not inorganic food. No, I'm sorry. This is not organic food.
Okay.
Which still has the proper amount of cultures available because mm-hmm. they were not removed by I don't know if I'm getting this correct. Anyway, what does culture mean to you?
I think culture would probably mean like accepted. That's probably the wrong word. Hold on. I have an answer.
Okay.
let me form that. Sounds like a large question. It sounds like it's a big question.
It's a big question, yeah. And it's a big question for a reason, because I thought about it for quite some time over the weekend. And I think many episodes ago on the Pop, I told you about how I like independently came up with the idea of like religion, where I was like, you know what would be really cool is if a bunch of people came together and they all sort of like decided like morally where they stood on things, and then they were able to like band together, and it's, oh yeah, okay. Yes, that does exist and has existed just about as long as time has.
Right.
Like
they got there fast.
So the interesting thing about it the other day was I was thinking about this 50% divide on things.
Right.
And basically what I came up with independently, again, entirely on my own, not to pat myself on the back or anything, is the Pope.
Is the Pope? What?
I was like, you want to know what would be really useful? What would be really useful is if inside of our culture, we had like a touchstone, you know, like someone who we decided is like the person. And there's a 50-50, which means we just have to choose heads or tails. We just have to choose which side we're going to agree upon. And then not disagree on it anymore. Like, let's just say,
right.
like this option has a 50% success rate. This option has a 50% success rate. We just need to pick one and commit to it and not dwell on the fact that the other one had just as good of a success rate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're picking heads, we're going heads. And this is like the way our culture agrees. And what we need is like that person who points the needle and is like, this is what we agree on. And everybody agrees. And I'm like, oh, I think in a lot of ways, that's the Pope.
That's like, well, like the Pope does for like the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Just
yes.
Like, this is, there's a lot of different ways you could think about different things. Here's the way we're going to do it. If you're part of our club, this is what we think.
Yes.
And
yeah,
we
yeah.
expect you to follow the rules in
exactly.
that regard.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like every once in a while, the rules change.
Yeah.
The views change, and they have changed because we misinterpreted it before.
Okay.
Now we agree this. And it's sort of like as a part of that group, you then have like the person who like points you. And so what I think is interesting, and I'm speaking about probably America specifically, but possibly the planet, because I think as time goes on, my leaning definitely starts to be much more in like a one world mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's like a hot take on something.
I mean, like the phrase one world doesn't strike me as like brand new.
Yeah,
or,
of course.
Or like,
yeah.
Like world without borders or something.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
I think that's largely like the way that I think that we could go with things is attempting to figure out how to think more as one big instead of many separate.
It's yeah. So to like zoom out to like a space example or something, like imagining a galaxy where interstellar travel is common.
I have a quick question about the galaxy. Okay. Is it far, far away?
Extremely.
Okay, good, good, good.
Yeah. Continue. Everything in space is far, far away. Tis the nature. Hence the name.
Right.
There's lots of space.
There's lots of space in space.
There's plenty of space in space.
Space is big.
Space is big. It's a nice feather in your cap. Anyway, if you imagine an interstellar world, like or a, like a galaxy where you can travel between planets, and that's just part of it, it would seem ridiculous if they were like, oh, you're from Earth, have you ever been to like China down there? And you're like, I'm actually not allowed in China. And they'd be like, why, what'd you, oh, wow, okay, what'd you do? And it's like, I just wasn't born there when I was born on Earth, so I'm only actually allowed on like a small section of a certain continent.
And sure, I mean
it's not that I couldn't go, it's just that I would have to land and file a bunch of paperwork and then probably board a plane, not from like space, like in atmosphere,
because a plane is like an in atmosphere space shuttle, so
right,
to speak.
Exactly. that would seem ridiculous.
It might, you know? It might,
like in a world where you could travel to other planets, that you were like stuck traveling to only a certain portion of North America on your home planet would be weird.
Yeah, yeah, right, that makes sense. That yeah. makes sense. But like I think for me, so much of it is, and I think there's a really good episode of Parks and Rec about this, but the idea is basically like Leslie wants to go and save like the animal shelter. And in order to save the animal shelter, she has to like take funds from somewhere to save it. And it's like, of course we want to save the animal shelter. That's a great idea. So we'll take funds from here, and the animal shelter is good. And then it's sort of like, oh, but see now the food kitchen just lost its funding. So it's like, in order to keep this going, you got to go tell the animal shelter that we can't give them the money, or we have to find it from somewhere else again. And so she keeps having to like take it from somewhere else, you know,
yeah,
in order to like find a way to keep solving the puzzle, because it's sort of like it's like a slider puzzle, you know, it's like one piece is missing and you can move all the other pieces around,
right,
but there's always one spot where there is no slider puzzle piece,
right,
because that's how it works. Otherwise nothing would ever move.
Yeah.
And so
but if all the pieces are in the right spot, at least it makes a pretty picture.
If all, that's true.
Yeah,
that's a good point. So where is it okay for that empty space to ultimately end up being? And it's kind of like anything that is good for like this usually means that it was less good for this. So like I think that when I think about the world, I think that there is also like a finite amount of like wealth that is available. And it's sort of like, how do you figure out how to like more evenly expand it,
uh-huh,
so to speak, so that it's all in all of the places. And in order to do that, I think that you need to be able to think of the whole world as one, like we're all working together. And so like in that way, it's almost like Earth itself needs a culture that like, that it is like, is imperfect, but reliable. Does that make sense?
I think it does make sense. And it is, I mean, it's definitely a very, what, like, what's the word? Like a community driven way of thinking. Like it's, you know, because as it were, like, you know, every given country is just going to be looking out for its own citizens.
Yes.
And stuff.
Right.
And that's what's going to be best. And of course, the citizens, you know, benefit from the country looking out for them. So then they're bought into their own country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, if you want to make a decision, it's like, hey, like this decision is very favorable for, you know, like let's say Norway. It's like, then who is it not favorable for?
Right.
Because I think that this would sort of be the idea that somehow, some way, if it's good for somebody, then it means that it was less good for someone else.
Not always.
Because I do feel like there is a circumstance here where there's like an undiscovered resource.
Yeah.
That could be available, where it's like, we have a whole lot of this and we don't need all of this because there are only so many of us here, but you guys don't have this like we do, and you have something else. And like, that's how basic commerce began, you know, like that is the exchanging of goods. That is the marketplace.
Yeah.
Or even like the reason for currency, you know, it's like, if I had cows and you had chickens and I had enough chickens to merit, did I get that wrong? If I had a cow that I was going to trade you for some chickens,
yeah,
but you didn't have any place to put a cow, then it's like, I might have value wise enough to allow the exchange to happen, but you don't need a cow.
Right.
And so it's like, instead I can be like, well, here's a certificate that can be spent elsewhere, and that elsewhere is everywhere.
Right, right. Like, yeah, maybe, yeah, other than, like, me making the trade and be like, well, I can't keep this cow, so I gotta spend this cow. The problem is, if I don't spend the cow by the time the cow dies, then I don't have any more currency, and I just lost all my chickens.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, you know, that...
Cows make bad currency.
Yes. Been saying it for years.
Yeah.
And people will listen eventually. But... yeah, I think that's why I'm like curious about this idea of culture, because I think that in America in particular, I feel like we were like we were such a melting pot by our very creation, mm-hmm. that like that there almost ended up being no one culture that defined all of it. Like, right. It's too spread. It's almost like there are lots of cultures and they all live very close to one another, but because not all people like are even familiar with the cultures of the other people in like very nearby places, it means that these ideas like can like clash together very easily.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, like this idea is good for you for these reasons because of what you see on a daily basis. Like you walk down a city street, which means you see all of these types of things, and therefore you would like decisions allocated towards the things that you see on a daily basis. And that makes sense. Like, what other area to put energy into than the things that you know that need solving?
Right.
But then meanwhile, if like on the flip side of things, like I walk down like a cornfield every day and that is what I see, then as a result, it's like you taking those resources and putting them over there. It's sort of like that doesn't take into consideration the cornfield. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it's like, what's tricky about that is that those are two very different cultures that can live within miles of one another.
Sure.
But completely different outlooks when it comes to life entirely.
Right.
And so what would be interesting to me is if there was some way to almost like better, it's like my mind goes to like level the playing field. It goes to...
It's not, I don't think it necessarily has to like try and level the playing field. Like, you're never going to have a situation where everyone exists on the exact same like field.
Right.
You know, like there will always be differences based on like where you live and what the geology of that place is and what the weather is and stuff like that. Like, it's never going to be exactly the same, but you like want to try and cultivate a culture where everyone is working for the greatest amount of good for everyone. And I'm not sure if that's like, you know, like collectivism or something like that.
Yeah. Collectivism is probably a good way to look at it.
But
yeah.
It doesn't necessarily even just have to be that. I think what a lot of people, I think it comes down to like two really big things. And, one is like, I think we've talked about this before, is like looking for like the what is the win-win scenario,
sure,
in any given thing. So it's like, yes, I have to take from here to give to there, and that makes it worse for these people but better for these people. Like, that's very like win loss and it's like everything might not always be perfect. There might not be a perfect solution for everyone every time, and that, I mean, that's just part of life. But in like a win-win scenario, it's very like the way you achieve that is typically by trying to be very honest up front with whoever the other party is about like what your goals are, and them being very upfront about what their goals are, like what is best for you, what is best for me. Because so often when two parties like come to try and like work something out, it's very like cards close to the chest. Don't show them anything. Don't tell them what we really want, because if they can see all the cards, they'll be able to take advantage of us.
Right. Like everything's become like a negotiation.
Everything's becomes a negotiation, but it's like, and it's like a very like, we need to like win this thing, but it's, that's rarely the best solution. Like, because if you know exactly what they want and they know exactly what you want, and you're both determined for everyone to get what they want, then that is always going to yield a better outcome for everybody. Because
sure.
Like, it's like, you know, and I think part of the way you get there is through like, a skill. I really wish they could like just teach just endless classes on this, or that it was like a much bigger part of American culture, which I know is not, but it's just like empathic listening.
Sure.
Which is just it's exactly what it sounds like. It's like doing a lot more listening to someone else and hearing what their needs are and trying to put yourself in those shoes and imagine what would I want in that scenario? And then returning back to like, what do they want? I can understand why they want that. What do I want? Hopefully if the other person can practice this too, then you can once again, more easily achieve that sort of like win-win scenario. But it's, it's about not just wanting what's best for you, because I think that's the thing. It's like people feel like, well, I can't only care about what's good for everyone else. Like what my needs are important as well. And it's like, yes, they are. But if you care about other people getting what they want as much as you care about what you getting what you want, because you getting what you want is important too, then that's still going to yield more for everybody.
Yeah. And I think that's extremely, extremely well stated and very like, well, I think laid out. And so probably what I would come back to with like my underlying question would be like, is there a way that sort of like opens up the focus? Cause I almost feel like there's like these like, greater than less than signs that are facing you and facing out into the world. And you sort of want the greater than sign facing you. Like, the maximum amount of good is going to flow in at you.
Right. Like, I mean, I think what most people want more than anything, well, I don't know. I can't speak for everyone. I know what I always feel like what I want more than anything is like a feeling of security.
Yes.
And safety.
Yeah. Right.
And it's, I don't know if it's like a product of our own culture or not, but it often feels like the way to have more security is to have like more like money.
Yeah.
You know, like the more you can be like short like that, that normally feels like that's what's going to like keep you safe.
Yeah. And I think that in a lot of cases, when it comes to disagreements between two people on like a very interpersonal level, and when it comes to change out in the world, is that your security is being somehow taken from you. And so like sort of that word insecurity, it would be something and on that very personal basis where it's like, if you see, if let's say I'm out to lunch with my wife, Allison, a very handsome looking gentleman comes over and starts having just a jovial conversation with her. It's sort of like the literal reason that it's called insecurity is because now, like to myself, I might be looking at the situation and being like, this person brings me a lot of happiness. And I can see that this person is bringing her some happiness in this moment. And I am afraid that if something happens, then my source of happiness might go and hang out with that source of happiness instead.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Like it does.
It's like from a security standpoint, you are like, I have this reliable source of happy and I don't want that to go away.
But see, what you're describing is like a very like scarcity mindset.
Sure.
Like there is only so much happiness that can even be had. And if my wife is experiencing some happiness from someone else, then that's happiness I can't offer her as well.
Exactly. Or right.
And
right.
It's like, and like this is another, I think
that's
key
so
part
well
of it.
Said. That's so well said.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, that's not true. There's that's like the scarcity mindset. And I think that's what a lot of people just naturally operate on. Like it's hard not to, because yeah. It's just like, it's that feeling of security and stuff. But the opposite is of course having like a more abundance mindset and recognizing that like, oh, this person makes my wife happy and like we're married, so I can take solace in that and know that that is a secure thing. That's a fixed point in my life. And if she's happy, that's good. It doesn't mean I will not be able to make her happy.
What's interesting about it though, is that there's like a very like almost physics level response that is happening in this particular situation where there's like an equal and opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. Where it's almost like you might be able to witness this very positive interaction between this other person and in this case, my wife. And like, it's almost like because that very positive reaction comes from over here, then the insecurity typically manifests as a very negative reaction.
Right.
In response. So it almost to me feels like the natural order of things would almost suggest that is like that is the most likely way that this emotional reaction is going to take place, like almost like on the most fundamental basis from a very like simple animalistic standpoint. It's almost like the way that it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like if you go to like a group of lions or whatever, it's like that, literally is like the function is like, if the other male came into the group, then it's like, you are supposed to want the other male to go away from the group.
Right.
You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I think that we are smarter than that, I guess, is sort of like the, is like the hope here.
Right.
In that they're in exactly like what you said is recognizing the fact that just because this positive experience happened doesn't mean that you need to react with negative. You could just also be positive and make Alice's day even better by providing that much more positivity. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile. And it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club.
Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Yeah, I'll share a story here that I sometimes feel embarrassed to even share from college, but it was kind of along these lines. So when I was in college, our fellow GMA member, John, also went to Virginia Tech at the same time I did.
Okay.
And, was probably, my best friend at school for sure, which is, of course, no surprise.
Right, right.
You know, given everyone's history and stuff.
Right.
But John was part of the architecture program at Tech. And as it's like, the best architecture school in the country, go Hokies, whatever.
Yep.
But part of that, the reason everyone ends up being so good is because everyone really, really cares about it.
Yes.
So everyone spends a ton of time in the architecture studio. And as such, all of the people there become super duper really good friends.
Yep.
Right?
I remember this.
Yeah. So it's like, I remember that feeling of like, oh man, my best friend John now has all of these other new super tight friends. And like, that's not like not that I didn't have friends in my own major and stuff, but it's not like this like hardcore dedicated time you're all spending together or anything.
There was a very, very, very tangible difference in the college going experiences, like watching the sheer and utter enthusiasm of these people who were spending all of their time in studio, like not because it was required, but because it was what they wanted to put into their craft.
Right.
Versus I felt like many of my classmates, which were very much like, how do I get the assignment done as quickly as possible with a passing grade?
Right.
And it wasn't like, I want to crack something with this research paper right now. Like, it was just, I have a research paper that's due on Thursday.
So. I just want this assignment done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Continue though.
Okay. So anyway, amongst all the studio friends, there was like one other dude in particular who his name was Kyle, and he was like the most other John Jennings person I've ever met. And I know you've met Kyle as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
to say Kyle is the coolest person anyone's ever met would be an accurate statement. I mean, he is exactly as cool as you think. Whoever you're picturing, that cool.
He is that cool.
Yes.
He is that cool. And he was someone who I remember when we started hearing all these stories and I was like, I am not going to like this person.
Right. Him and John were like super good buds and they would hang out in architecture all the time. And I remember one night me and John are hanging out and he's like, oh, we're going to get Kyle over here. And I was like, I remember this like tremendous insecurity, I'm going to lose my best friend to this other person or something.
Right.
And it was like, I remember sitting in the car in the moment, just deciding I can either really dislike this person. It was this weird self-aware moment where I was like, I can choose to really dislike this person or I can choose to try and really like this person.
Right.
And not let this thing, become a huge insecurity for me that makes me really upset.
Right.
And I was like, okay, Kyle's going to be this awesome person. And I remember choosing that night. And the three of us just hung out. We went to four different parties or something. And it was a ball. It was just a total blast.
Yeah.
And it was and from then on out, it was just anytime I, saw Kyle, I was like, what's up? And it was, we're just buds.
It's so true.
And it was I can physically go back to that moment of feeling like I am choosing right now whether or not your existence on this planet through no fault of your own will cause me continuous negative feelings or continuous positive feelings.
Right.
Yeah. And it was just in that moment, I was like, why would I ever choose to have someone give me completely negative feelings all the time?
Especially when you consider the fact that this is one of our best friends. So it's if he is best friends with someone else, do you know what that probably means?
That you would be good friends.
That you would be good friends.
Exactly. Yeah,
he's friends with both. He's the common denominator.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And I had a very similar experience with Kyle where I remember the first time that I had met him, because I went to a different school. I had decided when I was growing up, dad would take us skiing. And so being the classic middle child that I was, I got into snowboarding.
Yeah.
You know,
because
I got to do something different.
Got to do something different.
Yep. So.
Got to be alternative.
Yeah. Look, man, I'm just misunderstood. okay. So the thing was, is that we went infrequently enough. So I went snowboarding for the first time when I was eight. And we probably went I would say like maybe once a year, every other year, eventually maybe every 3 years, like one time per season.
Yeah.
So I never got good at it as like a kid. I had done it. I had taken lessons, you know, done all the things. But like for the most part, if I was going snowboarding, it pretty much meant that I was falling down the mountain the entire time.
Right.
By myself. Mm-hmm. Because I was not skiing with you and Dad and Tyler and
right.
Like who could all do the activity
right
at the same speed. And so when I was in college, I remember thinking that I was like, this is like a critical life skill that I never really mastered. So like I need to go out, I need to get a snowboard, I need to do this on my own, and I need to figure out like how to do it, because eventually my family is going to depend on me to be able to know how to snowboard. But like as if that was like literally an essential skill for like eventually being able to share with my family, which I now stand by, you know, it's like, I'm excited.
You mean your family, like your future wife and children? Or,
yes. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
Just because it was like something that like Dad was just so good at,
yeah.
You know, that I was like, okay, like this is something that I need to be able to do. And so I went out and I got a snowboard and boots and did all the things. And my first ever trip, I remember I was going with John and his brother and Kyle. And I was like, great, Kyle's coming. And I remember like trudging out into the snow, and I was like so nervous about it. And I was like, I'm like, last time I did this, I spent the whole day falling down, and Kyle snowboards whereas everybody else skied.
Yeah.
it's like oh man, this is gonna be, and sure enough, we strap into our boots. Kyle gets up, stands up from his, like off of the ground from his butt. The first thing he does is a 360,
just like stands up and does
he just stands
it.
Up like, and
let's
does,
go.
And I'm like, Kyle. And then he's like, let me show you, man. And he is like the most patient person in the world, and like truly fantastic, and like is, instead of like going just like bombing, which he is very clearly capable of doing, spends like hours helping me
hone my craft,
like get the skill. And it was just like, you're a good person. Like it was like, oh man, it was such an example of somebody who like probably had no idea going into it what the pre-existing like
right.
sentiment may have been. And oh man,
there is nothing harder than trying to go on a skiing / snowboarding trip and matching and like trying to make sure, because like you want to just invite all of your friends, but the fact of the matter is all of your friends probably don't exist at the same skiing level.
Yeah.
Like some of them are probably way better than you, and some of them are like, I don't want to be left out of the trip. Of course I can ski. I went once as a kid with the Boy Scouts.
Right.
And you know what? Do you know what? That person cannot ski.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's no effect. That doesn't make them a bad person or anything. It just, it's like, it's a really tricky business, like what to do on the mountain, because you want to go and do all the like the really fun stuff that you're capable of doing at whatever your skill level is. And you definitely, and the thing about like skiing and like mountain biking and all those like sports like this is, once you sort of like mastered like the basics and gotten towards that, doing the basics often feels so pedestrian as to like why would I even come out here and do this, especially because the destination itself is often like a very expensive, limited time access to destination.
Yeah. It's and it's really funny, because like I got that first snowboard that Kyle, you know, taught me how to use.
Yeah,
thank you, Kyle. And
I'm sure he's a listener of the pop.
Most likely. Maybe John will listen to this episode and be like, Kyle, you should listen to this episode. I think you'll like it.
Uh-huh.
You might come up. I remember, so I had that board, and I remember when I got my, like I had finally gotten to the point where I was like, okay, like I have enough money and I've gotten good enough at it now that I can buy like a slightly nicer board. But I always kept my first one because I was like, this will be great. Now, if any of my friends ever want to go, I'll already have like the board and boots, and they'll be able to just like hop on and go. And it has been like one of these things where I was like, ooh, this was not a good idea. Like,
oh no.
Everybody who's ever used it is just like, I am sorry, but I'm going to say it. Like, I think that getting good, I think that starting to snowboard is harder than starting to ski.
No, I would definitely agree with that.
Okay.
Because here, skiing is on 2 feet.
Yes.
That are separate. And that's how you actually move around in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Snowboarding, your feet are stuck together.
And sideways,
yeah. Which is not how you typically approach the world.
Not really.
Yeah. So, it's... it's like one of these things. Best intentions was I'll have the snowboard for my friends. And realistically, I probably should have just sold it because that it was ultimately just the downfall of many a friend's weekend.
Yeah, it was just like, oh no, don't worry. You can come and you can come on the cheap because I've already got your gear covered.
Yes. 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 And this and was part of my argument.
So
yeah.
not only would that like often convince people to come and then also like try snowboarding, but chances are then it, you know, it's your snowboard gear, so it doesn't fit them as well, or the board's the wrong size, or they weren't good at snowboarding, but hey, it was free.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. This was my going back to like my early Diablo 2 phase. It was phase as if it ever ended. It wasn't a phase. But
that sounds like a TikTok. Like,
it is a TikTok.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It wasn't a phase. Yeah. Me as a kid. Me as an adult.
Right. Right. But it was my resting like offer to all friends at any given point in time was, I will buy the game for you if you will play it for me. And as a kid, the game only cost like $20. So, uh-huh. I mean, like not that that's, you know, I don't know, whatever. But as a kid, I definitely thought that I was being like much, much, much more generous than I feel like I do now as an adult, where I was like, look, I'll spend the $20 and then you can dedicate dozens of hours to playing this game with me. That's worth $20, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, it wasn't a very fair exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also think that the thing that I realized is that if you try to like force somebody into an interest instead of like letting them find their own way into it, is that it usually doesn't go very far.
That, I think, is probably a very wise statement.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like in the same way that I really couldn't pick up snowboarding when we were just going on these like periodic unplanned trips with Dad. I needed to do it on my own.
Yeah.
Get out there.
Yeah, get out there.
Get my first Enigma.
That's a Diablo 2 reference.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So Jay, I have a question here.
Okay.
To kind of change topics, because you have listed under your Wick of the Peak.
Yeah. My Wick of the Peak.
The TV show, not Squid Wars.
Not Squid Wars.
But Squid Game.
Squid Game.
So, okay. I'm curious about this because I still haven't watched it yet. And I will watch it. At this point in time, I'm just sort of in like a holding pattern, but I'm curious about it because you specifically told me that in watching this show, it has sparked many a conversations between Beth and yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about that. Like, I know the premise of the show, and as someone who hasn't seen it, I'm going to lay out to the best of my knowledge what the premise of the show is. And that way we have some type of marker for what shouldn't be spoilers.
Right. Like, this is just what you've simply been able to glean and infer from
general
existence near the internet.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So general context, the best of my understanding is some version of, it is a group of people who are either in debt or it's a game show and there is money involved. The catch being that losing the game is death.
That is correct.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So all that being that being said, that being the groundwork, me assuming I didn't just spoil anything for anybody because I also haven't seen it. So I'm in the same camp as you. Is there anything specifically about the show that you have talked about that could be interesting as a discussion topic? Because I already feel like I'm going to want to bite on this.
I'm sure you will have many a discussion topic. The question that I have, like, watching it, or that I think many people will have watching throughout the show is, like, why is the Squid Game happening at all?
Okay.
Like, what is the point of the Squid Game? Because it's not clear why it's being held at all.
Okay.
For a majority of the show.
Okay. So is there any chance, and this is me just jumping to conclusions here, is there any chance that the metaphor of the show is basically that people are committing their lives to creating this lifestyle of probably some version of consumerism meets debt meets never actually living your life, hard stop?
It okay. So well, okay. There, I don't want to spoil anything too terribly difficult. But basically, all the people that get recruited into the game are indeed people who are insanely in debt or who have otherwise like basically no effect in the world. Like one, like maybe you got sent to, you know, prison when you were 13 and you got out when you were 30 and, you know, all of your family is gone and who are you in the world?
Okay.
You know, like you may as well not exist.
Oof.
Kind of thing.
Okay.
Sort of stuff. So like,
So maybe a nothing to lose.
Well, yeah, basically, yeah, they're in a very nothing to lose situation, everything to gain situation. And it's so everything to gain that they're willing to basically risk their life to play. Okay. But so one of the very interesting caveats that is introduced very early in the show, I really don't think this is like spoilering anything, is that if the majority of the players vote to end the game, everyone can go home.
Interesting.
And that is a really interesting wrinkle because like they tell you about it like right away. And of course, as soon as they get there, like they're not told what being eliminated from the game necessarily means.
Okay.
So everyone goes through and, you know, plays the first game or whatever, where upon, you know, immediately just a ton of people die.
Okay.
Which I think that's not really spoiling anything. So then they decide they're like, then all the people are like, hey, wait a minute, maybe we should have that vote. And then they're like, very well, absolutely. You can, of course, vote. Now that the first game is over, though, before you vote, let us tell you the amount of prize money on the table right now. And then they tell them what the prize money is. And like, as soon as they look up and they're also like, and don't forget what it was like on the outside. Like, you had nothing. And this is what you could have by playing the game. Is it really like more worth it to be out there struggling than in here where maybe you could walk away with something?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so this is the crazy thing. And I don't super want, it's like, I don't want to spoil stuff, but if I want to be able to talk about it, if you don't want any sort of spoiler, anything at all, then, you know, you can just pause, fast forward for like 5 minutes or something.
Okay.
Good
heads up.
But I'll tell you a little bit about what happens for the sake of it. So indeed, after the first round, they have the vote and they do vote to go home.
Okay.
And then of course the people running the game are very much like unconcerned at all, which you're like, well, this is seems like a lot of organization to get everybody here.
Right.
You know, so before they leave, they're like, now you're leaving, but if enough people decide they want to come back, we can resume the games. And then you're like, well, that, like, who would ever? But then they show you everyone out in the real life, like everyone returns to their real life for like a day. And it's like, this is where the show gets very interesting because now it's not that they got like abducted or chose or something. Now they literally chose to leave and it's whether or not they choose to come back.
Oh, and that's fascinating.
Like, 'cause then they're there like very much by choice. And it's like this weird, like, what is the relationship like between like money and your ability to do anything in the world? And like, if you're so far in debt, it could be so crippling as to like it might be more worth it to you to like die.
To take that chance. Holy cow. Okay. It's pretty fascinating. And I think more than it makes me curious about the show itself and the specific plot and like who might win, you know, or who's in charge. It does make me wonder what the metaphor is supposed to be suggesting the game is.
Right.
And because I feel like listening to that, my mind immediately goes to this thought of you should walk away from the game. You should understand that there is a way to exist that is better than that risk. Like the risk isn't worth it. But it makes me wonder in my life, what would I be asked to walk away from? And like, assuming the idea is that it's supposed to suggest that we are in the game, all of us. Society is in the game. We're all in the game.
I think it might be suggesting that like you probably are unaware of like your own privilege or like what the like true
feeling of like, or what the real true like power of debt is.
Okay.
And like how like inescapable it can like be or feel.
Yeah.
And or like not just feel, but just how inescapable it might really be, despite you being like a good person who tried hard, who just made a few mistakes.
Right.
Yeah. So right. It examines that question a lot. I can't get too much more into like the why of the games without like really spoiling stuff.
Okay.
So or into like some of the later episode stuff that would also be interesting to talk about. So I will I would love to revisit this topic at a later date after you have watched the entire show. So that's probably going to take a while, I imagine. But just as a homework assignment, if people want to go watch Squid Game, we will eventually revisit it and talk about it. Although, fair warning, it is definitely not a family-friendly show. It is violent and bloody, and I would not watch it with your kids. But okay. If you are old enough to watch it and you don't mind that kind of stuff, it's not like super gruesome or anything like that.
Sure, sure, sure. But I mean, it's pretty heavy themes.
It is heavy themes, and there are people dying a lot.
It does make me, I would say this portion of conversation is far and away the thing that has made me the most interested in going and watching it.
Okay.
Like to the point where I think I would almost watch it without Alice. If that was the requirement, because normally we don't ever watch anything without the other.
Okay.
So, but this would be one where I'd be kind of curious about.
I'm very curious. I'm very curious.
I think it's immensely interesting. And I think very, very similar to the television series Black Mirror, which I felt like always I had to consume in like bite sized pieces.
Yeah. You can't sit down and watch. You can't like binge Black Mirror.
No, you can't.
No.
And it's, I mean, like, I think that there are episodes I watched 5 years ago that like I'm still chewing on,
right?
That's, you know,
like, oh man. Ooh.
It's like they're such good thought experiments. Okay, that's good to know. Is there something lighter that we have on our list here today that we can close out this episode of the Pop with? Because okay, you have something written down here: barely broken things that make you adjust to a very weird status quo.
Yeah.
what is barely broken, Jay?
Barely, like, just This is something that I feel like as just like very much part of adulthood is, I think growing up, maybe I was like ignorant of the fact that of the things mom and dad were doing to keep like everything in the house running. Like, it just always seemed like everything just like works and runs. It's not really a big problem or something, or it's not that much of a concern because it's not my responsibility whether or not the things run.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't affect me. Don't affect me that much. I'm just a kid. I'm just a kid. But so
now with that one way thinking.
But what I mean is, when something is like really broken, it's very clear that you need to replace it or heavily focus on fixing it. But like if something is just sort of like barely broken, it's very easy to just be like, well, I'll just deal with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have my pantry door at the moment. I don't know if it's just like a product of the house settling a little bit or maybe some like humidity in the air or something, but it's definitely just started. Like when I open it, it'll just scrape the ground a little bit. And sometimes it'll get full on like stuck and you got to give it like a little tug.
Okay.
There's really no reason it should suddenly be touching the ground. Doesn't seem like.
Right.
Didn't used to touch the ground. It's a door. It's screwed to the wall. What's happening? Don't know. It's a little bit annoying.
You got leaky hinges.
No, it's definitely not leaky hinges.
It's a leaky hinge.
I don't think it's a leaky hinge.
If I've ever heard of it, a leaky hinge.
What does that even mean?
It means a hinge that's leaking. It means exactly what it sounds like.
It's not a leaking hinge.
Okay. If you say so.
Anyway.
I would check the carburetor.
On the door. Yeah.
On the door. Probably.
So it's like, now I realized one day that when I went to open the pantry, I just like had completely adjusted to just like give it like to open it and then time where the stick would be, and just like my hand naturally gave it a little extra tug.
Okay.
And it was like, now it's no problem. But it's like, now I've just completely adapted to the problem.
Yeah.
This is the new status quo. Rather than the door being fixed, I have just adapted to the problem.
Right.
It continues to be a problem. Like my garage door, very similar thing. I have no idea what's going on with the garage door. But
leaky hinge.
Not the button when you press it. Like I have to hold the button the entire time the garage door goes to the floor.
Okay.
And I used to just have to push the button. And now if I just push the button, it'll start and it'll go whoop, and it'll come back. And I don't know what's going on. Like it used to be the case that if something was like in the way of the laser beam or something, it would be like, oh, there's something in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Something in the way. There's nothing in the way.
Okay.
Nothing in the way at all. It just, you just have to force it all the way down. And it's this massive inconvenience. But it's not a massive inconvenience. It's like a 10 second inconvenience.
It's a small inconvenience.
Exactly. Yeah. But now I just do it because otherwise the door will be open. It's like sometimes I have to open the door.
What I have always found about these things is that I feel like, and these are very good examples. And I was like, when you said it, I was like, I know that I've done these things. And I was trying to think of like something very specific that like had gone on for so long. Cause I have done these small adaptations to something that was in the process of breaking, but like the fix works for so long and just well enough that it's sort of like, yeah, like forever. You just always sort of like bent it this one way and it would still work.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of like, yeah, like I just sort of, you know, I just sort of like bend it. And then like eventually it breaks,
yeah,
you know, in like the much more obvious way. But usually even then I can find another way to sort of like continue to just barely get it to work.
This is the problem is that like with the garage door, it's like, I don't know how to fix the garage door.
Yeah.
Like I wish the garage door had a giant dent in it and, you know, all the windows shattered. And it was just like, I need a new garage door.
Yeah.
I could very, I can call someone to get me a new door. For some reason, it doesn't seem like I could call someone to be like, can you fix my door? Like, obviously, it's probably the same person.
It is probably a solution.
There probably is a solution. But then I will rationalize these other things. Like, I remember one day Luke going into the house, when the garage door used to work and, you know, being like, ooh, do you want to push the button? And he pushed it. And that was great. And the next time I was like, I want to push the button. I was like, okay. And I remember him pushing it like 10 times. Like they're like, ooh, blah, 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 you know? And I'm like, I feel like what happened is one day Luke pushed the button a ton and there's some like built-in sequence that like reset it or something.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like,
that seems likely.
Exactly. But also one, it doesn't help me fix it that much better. Uh-huh. And two, like maybe that's not even the problem. Maybe it's just, is broken in a different way, and now I'm attributed. Now I don't know what the cause is. Did he activate some weird reset sequence by tapping it a bunch of times in quick succession? Is there something just like in the way of the laser? Did the laser get hit? And now it's like pointing at something just barely.
You've thought about it a lot.
It's very annoying.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it.
Super annoying because it used to work flawlessly, and now it doesn't.
Okay. Well, maybe we can both set missions for ourselves because I actually did think of an example. So I have this one weird thing that happens to me when I get into my truck. My Bluetooth will connect, and for whatever reason, it will play the Bluetooth almost in this like dot dash, like super hyper sped up in like incoherent way.
Okay.
And every single time I get into the truck, it does this.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I'll hop in the truck, turn it on, like my Audible will auto queue up or whatever. And it'll be it's very clearly playing like the name of the Wind audiobook or whatever, but it's not playing it just so fast that you just have to like comprehend it faster. Cause I already listened to it on double speed anyway. So
yeah.
I can handle the speed. You can't understand.
It's incomprehensible.
And the solution is fine. You basically just pull open your phone, turn Bluetooth off, turn it back on again, and it fixes it 100% of the time.
Right.
Works every single time, but it's also a problem every single time.
Right, but you shouldn't have to do that.
You shouldn't have to do it. You know, it's a new-ish truck. Like it's not even like a new deck that like I had put into the center console as like a Ben Carlin type of like audio upgrade or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, this is just the factory deck. And it's been one of those things where I've been annoyed with it before, but I've tried to actually film it so I can like send it to somebody and be like, hey, has anybody ever had this problem before? But the problem is that if you turn your camera on, then it turns Bluetooth off. And so it's like every time I try to like record it, it's like, no, you can't record it at the same time. So it's like, I'm like, that's as much as I was willing to attempt to try to solve this problem. But maybe, maybe what could happen is in the next week, I can try to solve my Bluetooth problem and you can try to solve your garage door problem.
Okay.
It's a mission. It's a goal.
It's a goal.
Anyway, if you guys are interested in supporting us on Patreon, you can do so over at patreon.com/popcornculture. We currently are inside of Q4 of 2021. What year are we in?
Yeah. When is it?
Where if you sign up anytime between now and December 31st, you will have access to a limited vinyl record, which has an exclusive episode of Popcorn Culture pressed into it.
Yes.
Not carved into it. Not
rolled into it.
Not needled into it. Or however other ways the original source material record is created. It will be a vinyl pressed record. The vinyl itself, glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark.
Which is pretty cool. It's going to be the only way that you can listen to
it. There will
be
no digital way to listen to it.
No digital way.
No.
None whatsoever. Again, it's going to be patreon.com/popcornculture. It is the quarterly merch tier, which is going to be Buzziest B or Jazziest J.
Definitely Jazziest J.
Well, you know. Be sure to check that out. Otherwise, we're also over on Reddit and Twitter. Or if you have any feedback for the show whatsoever, you can email that over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.